It's 50-50 football. In the studio, I've got Matt Jones and Mo Stewart, and over the phone, I'm going to be joined by Tommy Langford to talk about West Brom, Steve Tudor, Manchester City, and Robbie Scotcher to talk about Crystal Palace. They're all to come on the phone, and it's a big, big weekend to come. And we'll start with the Saturday evening game. And Mo, it's a good Saturday evening game. I sort of rate Saturday evening games in terms of how rattled you're likely to be by them if you're one of the sides. And this is one of those ones, I think, where, you know, it's got a nice get Southampton focused vibe about it this half five on the telly.
Very much so. I think over the course of the season, if you look back at the 5:30 games, they tend to have been some of the best games as well. I mean, there was us against Arsenal, Leicester, Man City, just off the top of my head. That, like you say, it seems to kind of make people raise their game. The only problem I have with Southampton is they don't really have anyone up top at the moment. Austin and Gabby Deeney both injured, so it could be a little bit of a great up until a point and then nothing.
The half five versus the half 12 thing, I don't think anyone likes playing at home at half 12. Matt, I think you've got to at some point, but I don't think anyone really thinks, you know what, home at half 12, that's great, whereas everyone thinks home at half 5, can't wait.
Oh, it's worse going away at half 12, though, isn't it? Surely. You know, unless you stay over on the Friday night. I don't know what you're like, Neil. Yeah, I know you like to go and have a bit of a party.
I like to have a nice time.
But no, I do like the half 5 ones as well. But I, like you said, this has got the feeling of a really good game. Two sides that are quite open and enterprising. Southampton are coming back into a little bit of form. I mean, they've won the last two games, but like you said there, Mo, I think that the main concern for them is scoring goals. I was looking at the two top scorers before we came on the show, and Austin's got 6 and Redmond's got 6. And you're thinking, for a side last year that had Pelle, Mane, Tadic chipping in with goals, they seem to be really free scoring last season. That's been a huge issue for them, but City, the team that give you chances, don't they? So it's set up really nice, I think.
Let's get over to Steve Tudor from 9320 podcast and see what he makes of it. Great to speak to Steve Tudor from the 9320 pod. He's joining me now to work right the way through the Man City situation as it opens itself up. And it's a big few weeks coming up for the club, isn't it, Steve, really? Win last week against Hull was the least you'd expect. A good win, though, and a good performance. And now it's Southampton away, Arsenal in the FA Cup final, Man United at home.
Yeah, it's a pretty good trio of games. I'm more concerned about the Southampton game than the other two, to be honest.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, last season, the 4-2 defeat there, that was just the most abject, apathetic performance I've seen. It was the dying days of Pellegrini's kind of era. But it was just the manner in which the players were so half-hearted. Mane got a hat-trick that day, I think. So I probably kind of went some way as the kind of... you know, proving to Liverpool of his worth, I think, that day. He was unplayable.
Yeah.
But that aside, I mean, just the memory of Kolarov strolling back and just letting, you know, Mane romp through was totally depressing. So anything better than that, really, I'll snap your hand off.
It's my worry with these games, often when I look at them from a Liverpool perspective, and Liverpool are in a similar boat up against West Brom on the Sunday, is I almost feel as though, and maybe I'm just completely wrong, and I quite like to see a study on it, but I always go, oh no, it's on the telly, and it's a showpiece time, and it's R5 on a Saturday. They're going to be up for it. Their fans are going to be up for it. It's the main thing they've got to play for between now and the end of the season, Southampton taking points in games they probably shouldn't be expected to take points in. They're going to want to prove some sort of point somewhere, and you know, I always worry you'll be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, it's bang on. I mean, I always feel that way about lunchtime kickoffs. I just feel we never kind of give a good showing of account, a good account of ourselves there. But yeah, that's absolutely bang on. Southampton, basically, they're safe. They're kind of coasting now. But for a televised game, they'll want to show what their worth is. And yeah, it's just become a bit of a bogey team, certainly down there anyway. So if we can get the 3 points, because right now, obviously, 3 points are absolutely crucial, and just to continue with the top four chase.
You mentioned the top four chase. It struck me as quite interesting, again, from my slightly biased point of view, but I was getting mildly annoyed, and I'm glad that, as ever, Guardiola was the person who pointed it out almost before anyone else. I was getting mildly annoyed when everyone was acting as though the top four was some sort of thing that was to do with Arsenal, Man United and Liverpool, and everyone else had it sort of boxed off. Whereas I think Guardiola was quite frank after Match of the Day last week, almost too frank in a sense. They said to him, you know, do you think this will go to the final game? And he emphatically said, yeah, I think it will. And, you know, I think that suggests the mindset's there to battle on the one hand, but that there's an expectation that it's going to be a battle all the way through for City. There's not the expectation inside the club that they'll just open the strides at this stage and pull away.
Yeah, I think he got some undue criticism as well for kind of referring to it as a trophy and to finish in the top four. I think some of that was lost in translation, and he was just merely getting across the importance of it. Because, of course, the title's gone now. So, you know, what we've got to play for is Champions League qualification. And it's not going to be easy, but what is in our favour, and same kind of could be said for you guys, if, you know, the fact that you're playing better against the bigger sides this season, but we've both got, on paper at least, easy run-ins, or certainly winnable games amongst what we've got left. So I think the two of us have got, you know, on paper, achievable aims ahead. And yeah, we've got the derby, and that's not going to be easy, of course. But we do have a very good record against United at our place, and United just can't seem to win to save their lives right now. So if we can get that one out of the way, and of course Southampton this weekend, which is always a difficult one for us, then I do fancy us, but no way is it going to be easy. I mean, Arsenal are just fighting for their whole immediate future right now, aren't they? The players, the manager, the whole club feels, if they can galvanise themselves, then they are going to be a force going in the weeks ahead, or they could similarly just crumble away. There's no way of knowing. But if they do the former, then yeah, they're going to be tricky as well. So it is all to play for.
I think it's huge, and I think it's interesting that you point that out. It is almost defined by the next three, the season as a whole, really, the next three, if not almost the next four, because there's every chance that you go to Middlesbrough and they'll know that a Man City defeat relegates them. And so that'll create its own challenges. But then there's every chance that by the time you face you've got three homes back to back in May, Palace, Leicester and West Brom. And there's every chance that for all three clubs, in a positive sense, their seasons are over, jobs are done. And that, you know, their three home games where they're going to come the Etihad and almost accept defeat a little easier than they might have done earlier in the season or around now. And that's why, if City can remain obviously in fourth or within touching distance between now and then, you know, there's no reason whatsoever why you wouldn't look at those three games and think, you know what, if we need to get 9 points, we'll find a way to get 9 points.
Yeah, it's an old cliche, isn't it? Having one eye kind of on the beach, and that might well be the case with that trio. With the Middlesbrough one, that's a concern because it's just so hard to call, isn't it, at this stage of the season? I mean, I'm sure not the only one who does accumulators every week. And right now, it's just potluck, isn't it? Because, you know, throughout the season, you kind of do know which teams are going to be struggling, which teams are going to, you know, be really up against it. And suddenly all the results are just get overturned and all these surprises are thrown up now because teams are fighting for their lives. So it's just a totally different ballgame. But if we can get through, like I say, Southampton and the Derby and get past Middlesbrough as well, which, to be fair, when we beat them earlier this season, they were just bother.
They're in a really bad place.
Yeah. I mean, but when it comes to, you know, having their survival on the line, you would expect it to be a different proposition. But yeah, I hate saying kind of on paper that we can do it, but it does look like that. I'd certainly kind of, you know, I'm more happy with our run of fixtures than some of our rivals have.
Looking at this game and looking at the last one as well, are you surprised by the goalkeeper situation?
Yeah. I'm not a fan of Bravo. I defended him and defended him, and he was unable to defend himself. And what I find particularly odd about Bravo is just the manner in which he concedes goals. He just seems to, his whole body shape seems to be wrong, and he seems to fall on the ball, and it just looks odd. You know, individually, you can look at each mistake he's made and say, well, that isn't a catastrophe. That's not, you know, a howler. But when it happens time after time after time, so I genuinely thought it was going to be Willie now from now until the end of the season, and his recall was a genuine surprise to me. Whether now, you know, Pep's starting to think, right, well, give Willie a semi-final place and, you know, hopefully the final, and the league now kind of reverts back to Bravo. But I'm not happy with that. I'm really not. He does not emit any form of confidence whatsoever.
But you expect him to start at the weekend?
I think he possibly could, yeah, because there was just no reason for his recall other than, you know, Pep to try and install some confidence back into him, get some kind of games back under his belt. Because I can't see it just being a one-off, because why would he kind of recall him just for Hull? It just made no sense. Caballero was fully fit, so he's on the bench. So there has to be some logic behind it where he's thinking now, I want to go to the end of the season now with my two goalkeepers with, you know, kind of game time under their belt.
Is that the other one that surprised me, missed out against Hull, was Fernandinho. It appeared to just come a bit from nowhere. Is the expectation he'll be back in for Southampton?
I hope so. I'm a huge fan of his, but he has been lacking somewhat recently, and I've been overjoyed to see Fabian Delph kind of get back into the reckoning. I think he's had a real rough time of it. I think basically, you know, when he joined, he was labelled a snake. When Raheem joined, he was labelled a snake. City fans kind of galvanised behind Raheem because they were seeing, you know, his efforts on the pitch, whereas Delph, you know, he's been injured from the start, essentially. He's had, I think, 10 league starts since he's joined, you know, 18 months ago. So seeing him back into reckoning is really encouraging. And the manner of his performances as well, he's slotted in there, he's worked hard. He's basically now kind of potentially at least putting in the performances that Fernandinho was or has been for some considerable time. This season, his form has dipped dramatically. He's become kind of reckless, he's become rash. I said recently that one thing I always loved about Fernandinho was his ability to just push it and push it and push it, get the yellow, push it and push it, and then just hold back and just, you know, never seems to find himself getting sent off despite being a persistently dirty player, which, you know, every team needs that kind of player in there. Yeah. But now he's just become kind of a law unto himself. You know, some of the challenges he makes, it's a chicken situation. So he's become, how I say it, somewhat of a liability of late. And so with Delph coming back into reckoning now, I would expect him to start. And then you look at the right-back situation and think maybe Fernandinho could play there, as he's done 3 times already. But, you know, perhaps thrown another kind of curveball at us and started with Navas the last couple of games.
OK. Going to Southampton then, obviously, you've still got that front three or front four, including Silva, maybe even front five if you'd include De Bruyne as well. But, you know, looking at that, at times they're just irresistible. Are you optimistic of getting all 3 points, or do you think that it's going to be an exceptionally tough game where you'll just take anything that you get out the other side?
The latter, really, yeah. I mean, if that front five are firing, which, you know, they do more than not, you'd expect some goals. But at the same time, if Bravo starts, you also would expect to concede a couple as well. So I'm expecting something along the lines of a 3-2 or a 2-2, but ideally we'll come away with a 3 point.
Excellent stuff. Always good to speak to Steve. The new 93-20 podcast, you can find that out there as well if you search for it. Very, very good stuff indeed. Let's get back and see what everybody else makes of the top four situation. Always good to speak to Steve. 93-20, good lord, all the words are in there. Podcast available to start listening to now from a Man City perspective. And if you want to know what they're about, mention there Southampton. Throughout that and beforehand as well, gents, it's... I just think City will have too much, I'll be honest. And I think it's partially what Mo said before about, you know, about the goal-scoring prowess you mentioned as well, Matt, the numbers that are there. But I think it's been a case for Southampton all season, really. They've just looked not quite good enough in both boxes. They're a side probably better than the league, certainly the league points total in the gap between both penalty areas. But in both penalty areas, I think, is where they've fallen short, especially with the injuries that they've had as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the key thing for Saints. If you look at the midfield, I think you'd say... Romelu, who's having a fantastic season, is he at the base of it?
Really
suspended.
He's suspended for this game, yeah. So he's going to be a huge miss, obviously, when you look at City in that particular area. But I think they're pretty good in there. They've got good depth, a lot of high energy, high intensity players. But like you said there, I think when you lose a player like Mane, you lose a player like Pelle, and then you lose Charlie Austin, and then you bring in Gabby Adini as well, who looks like he's going to be a revelation in January. And then he gets injured as well. It is a massive blow for them. And I think the whole Jose Font issue as well has really set them back as well. I think Van Dijk's obviously been talked about a lot, hasn't he, and the influence he had, but I think Southampton were at their best, and I think Van Dijk to a degree as well was at his absolute pomp when he was next to Font and those two were together. So I think him going to West Ham is a big blow as well, and obviously Van Dijk, is it 3-4 months he's been out for now? It's going to be really
difficult.
It's
interesting though, because Southampton, I'd say probably more than any team in the Premier League, have been really good at bringing in unheralded, unknown youngsters into a team and doing all right, because Jack Stevens has come in for Van Dijk and I've been impressed with him. And more than that, Yoshida has actually really stepped up. He's kind of taken on the mantle as like, okay, I'm now the one who's got to shout at people and organise. And he's actually done quite well. So defensively, I think over the last couple of games, they've actually looked like they've got quite a good system going. And we've seen City in the past play well and miss chances. So, I mean, there's maybe a shard of light for Southampton in there if they can keep it solid, maybe use their pace, nick one, get the crowd on City's back and all these kind of things. But generally, conventional wisdom says that City have got a lot more to play for. I know that Southampton talks about the idea of finishing above West Brom in eighth, but that's a kind of a chocolate teapot trophy if ever there was one. So, yeah, I would expect that City, with the pressure on, will do just enough.
It just enough's interesting because City have had, you know, for instance, they went to Goodison Park and looked. I think the 4-0, I don't think the 4-0 flattered Everton at Goodison Park. I'm not sure to phrase it really. It's a 4-0 where once Everton go 2-0 up, they become worthy of 4-0 up, if you know what I mean, Matt. And City themselves, you got the impression to a certain extent, they just went, we can't handle with this today. Yeah. When it went 2-0, it became, we don't want to know anymore.
Yeah.
Not unlike Arsenal against Palace the other week on Monday night, where it got to 2-0 and it was as though Arsenal just did not want to be there, wants to be anywhere but there. You do sort of, you know, Mo before mentioned the Leicester 4-2, again, half five. You do sort of feel this as a Man City side that it can have a day where it just doesn't really want to do any more of this. And that's been a problem it's had all season. It can have a day from nowhere, especially on the road, where it can just all get a bit hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the teams that Guardiola picks and how attacking they are, you kind of set yourself up for that in a way, don't you? If it doesn't go to plan early on. Now you look at the team that played against Hull last week, it was Jesus Navas at right back, Kolarov centre back. You know, Fabian Delph came in for one of the first times this season. He had a decent game, scored a good goal by all accounts. But you look at that and you think, they can be gonna, and they're going to give you chances. And what I've always said about City, and especially under Pellegrini, was that when teams build momentum against them, they tend to find it really difficult to stop. And you know, you think back to that Liverpool game earlier in the season when Liverpool really got on top of them in the second half of the Etihad Stadium. And Liverpool should have killed the game in that spell.
Yeah.
City couldn't handle them. And Everton again, another one you mentioned there, Neil, when teams get a grip of them and start pressing them, start hassling them, they don't tend to like it. But you just wonder whether Southampton have got that edge about them and got that aggression about them at the moment, especially about Romeo in midfield as well.
It's going to be tough because Classy has been his replacement, and sure, he scored the winning goal last weekend. But yeah, in terms of his interception and tackling, it's not really as much his game. He's more of a passer, I'd say. So you're right. I think Romeo, almost as much as what's going on up top, is a big miss for them for this game.
Because that's the area you look at City and say, they have really come on since that Everton game. I think in midfield that day, he played Zabaleta and Torre. And you're thinking, you know, there's no legs in there really. And I think Silva was pushed wide, De Bruyne was pushed wide, and it just didn't really fit. But look at that front three now. Aguero's come back in and looking really lively again. Sane, he's fantastic. I mean, I just love seeing a left-footed player playing on the left wing. It's something you don't see hardly ever anymore in the modern game, but he's fantastic at it. Sterling, I think's improved a lot. So I think that area of the pitch is where they've really made strides since that Everton match, but there are still massive concerns at the base of the midfield, in defence and in goal as well.
The other thing about this is as Steve himself was saying there as well, Mo, is that they are, and there's been an acceptance now, I think, that they're in this dogfight around the top four. I think that's been quite a... I'm not, if I say I'm surprised by that, it'd be the wrong way to phrase it, but I think that for ages there was all the talk as though they weren't part of that, they were just going to sort of swan away and no one would be able to cope with it. Whereas now, Guardiola's mentioning it, that it could well go all the way, and right the way now down to the third, include Arsenal, include Everton still, it's all this, you know, every match feels as though it's got so much tension riding on it as well now, which could work in Southampton's favour because they can play with a little more freedom.
Very much so, and the City players this season haven't really reacted in the best way to the highest pressure situations. I mean, they got beat by Spurs in a very similar situation for the first real test of the season, and again when they had to go to Monaco and get a result, they couldn't do it there. So that's something that definitely teams would be looking at. But for me, it's interesting that we've got to the business, the real crunch end of the season, and for all season long we've been saying the top six are in the league of their own, they're much better, but even within the top six now there's a differential. There's teams who you look at them and they think they've got it right, they've got it sorted, basically the top two. And then you've got a couple of other teams, Arsenal, where they're kind of falling apart. But then you've got Liverpool, Manchester United, and to a certain extent City, where it's like they look like they could have a formula, and then the next week it all dissipates. So they're still kind of trying to find a way.
Yes, sorry, Neil. I think City in those three big games they've had recently have been a little bit disappointing for me. Obviously, they drew at Liverpool, drew at Arsenal when he should have really won that game, shouldn't he? You think back to the chances and the control they had of that football match, they should have gone on and killed that game. And against Chelsea, they played well in bits, but there's still this this kind of inherent softness about them. But I think what will ultimately be in their favour is looking at the fixture list before. They have got a really favourable run in. They've got four games at home. They've got United to play at home, Palace, Leicester and West Brom. And then they've got away games against Borough and Watford. So you look at that and you think they should take a lot of points from those remaining games. And while they might have struggled against some of the bigger sides this season, they have tended to do pretty well in the games that they should win.
Well, it's only one defeat in the last 10 for them as well. You know, it's worth remembering. And to move that along, Matt, towards the talking about fifth place, because I think fifth place is now fascinating. You've got you in not just to talk about Everton, to talk about everybody, but you know, from an Everton point of view, there's no reason why Everton can't have a genuine interest in fifth now. When you look at the table, when you look at what's happening at Arsenal, and when you look at the fact that Manchester United are likely to be distracted, they've got to face Chelsea this weekend, when Chelsea will be looking for the points, presuming Spurs have won. They will want to keep that gap at 7 points more than anything, whereas Man United have got to get through a game against Anderlecht in the meantime, and then another game against Anderlecht on the horizon. Yes, they've got the long unbeaten record, but you know, it remains six draws in the last 10 rather than the wins. That's something which, you know, right now Everton can have a look at. Top four probably looks just a bridge too far given the games in hand situation on Man City, but fifth place doesn't look all of a sudden impossible, whereas it did after the Merseyside derby.
Yeah, I think you're relying on a couple of things, and it sounds simple, but you're relying on Everton to be pretty much immaculate from now until the end of the season. I'd say they'd have to win five of the last six games, and you're relying on either Arsenal or United to have a massive collapse there. But I think I was looking at the team's fixtures before. I think Arsenal could collapse simply based on the fact they're in terrible form. Uncertainty with the manager, uncertainty with key players, fans are fractured. It's almost a perfect storm of negativity there at the moment. So they could definitely fall off. And United as well, they've got some really difficult games now between the end, now and the end of the season. They play Arsenal away, Tottenham away and Southampton away in the space of 10 days. And they could potentially have a Europa League semi-final second leg to play within that spell of matches as well. And I think Mourinho has sort of made it clear now, hasn't he? He's going to prioritise the Europa League, and he sees that as their best way into the Champions League. So I wouldn't say it's dead and buried by any means from an Everton point of view, but you are relying on those teams to slip up. And Everton's away record has been a little bit iffy. So you look at games against West Ham away and Swansea away, Arsenal away in the last day of the season, and think, have they got it in them to go there and win two out of three of those matches? And I'm not entirely sure that they have got it in them quite yet.
I think for me, it's one of those situations where if Everton have to play Arsenal last game of the season and a win gets them fifth, then I'd back them to do it right now. I know that Arsenal have kind of dragged themselves from the brink a few times recently, but the fact that they've still got Everton...
It looks too much of a brink at the minute, doesn't it?
It does. And I think it's one of those things where, similar to what we were saying last week about Sunderland, when you're doing the same thing again and again and again, you can fool yourself into thinking, oh, well, we'll just get out of it. We'll be fine. But then eventually, you will not be fine. There's always that one season where it goes too far, and this could very well much be that season.
But on that as well, I think, Mo, it's the idea of, and I think you've seen this in the past, I think, for instance, we've seen it with Liverpool a few times, I think you've seen it with Tottenham occasionally, and it's not happened to Arsenal, but I don't know quite what happens at Arsenal. Let's say this weekend, Arsenal drop points, and Liverpool and Man City both win, hypothetically speaking. I don't quite see how Arsenal finish the season strongly in any universe, because the very thing that we know how to do now looks effectively impossible. And I've seen Liverpool sides, as soon as they can't come fourth, fourth looks like it's getting harder and harder, more and more distant, absolutely fall off a cliff and end up coming sixth, seventh, eighth. Whereas Everton, no, for instance, fifth place is a hell of an achievement. It's a positive. It's something to work towards. And that's why I do sort of wonder. I do think that there's a point coming where Arsenal can demoralise themselves into finding this all really, really tricky.
The two things that could save Arsenal, one is the FA Cup. If they get a good win against Manchester City, who are still a very good team, obviously, then that could help them. And the game against Tottenham. Because games between Arsenal and Tottenham are played in the mind more, I'd say, than any other game in the whole of the league.
Merseyside derby.
Well, I mean, obviously that's another one. But I think in terms of how much it affects those two teams for the rest of the season, I've seen so many times you've seen Spurs collapse. I do really well up to that one point, lose to Arsenal, and it goes again. So if Arsenal can get a win in that game, then they will truly believe that they can do it again. However, if they don't, if they get embarrassed, then all bets are off.
Do you not think that process has already started a little bit with Arsenal, Neil? Because I look at the game against West Brom and think that was a demoralised team. That was a team that that felt, looked as though they had given up. And mm-hmm. I think one of Wenger's best qualities throughout the years is, like you said there, when it seems as though it's all insurmountable, it's all gone wrong, and they are going to finish outside the top four, they come on strong. They go to somewhere like West Brom, they dig out a win. They go to somewhere like Crystal Palace, and they dig out a win. And they've gone to those two games, and they've been absolutely pitiful in both. And I just wonder if that process you mentioned there has already gone underway with Arsenal.
I think it has. I mean, I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, across the whole of the season, Arsenal have lost eight, and you know, five of those are in the last eight games. So you know, before that point, they'd only lost three. And that now becomes quite a, you know, that this is this trend's emerging. The fixtures are cut up, but the way in which the fixtures are working out for them makes it increasingly tough to see exactly how they get the way home at this stage. I don't think, you know, even the Monday night game against Middlesbrough, one little thing happening, Mo, away from suddenly that becoming ridiculously difficult. They should have far too much for Middlesbrough, but it wouldn't take much for suddenly that to become a 1-1 draw, and it absolutely, and that kills them, and it just doesn't stop.
But the problem is Arsenal have is that Middlesbrough are probably the most demoralised team in the league at the moment, because they haven't won since December. Mm. They haven't even looked like winning in a long time. But the way Arsenal are, if Middlesbrough can get a lead against Arsenal, then all of a sudden, all of that transfers right back onto them. And essentially, if Arsenal can't beat Middlesbrough, then they've got serious, serious problems. I think we can all agree.
Mm. And I think that's likely to be on the road as well. It is worth pointing out that the North London derby is on the road. Manchester United-Chelsea then, Matt, becomes a strange game before we get on to Everton versus Burnley. It becomes a strange game in the context of all this, that Chelsea will very much know what Spurs have done, that United have got the Anderlecht question, that even when they kick off, United could be looking at a situation where, for instance, Liverpool and City might have both picked up 3 points at awkward away games. Yeah. And might at that stage be looking at each other going, well, this is, you know, given the other fixtures that we've got to come, we could have done with either of those sides dropping some points there.
Yeah, I think Thursday night will determine how United approach this one. I'm not entirely sure if they're home or away tonight. United, they're away from home. If they go there and get a, you know, 2-0 win, you could easily see Mourinho fielding a full-strength team, really going for this one and really fancying this one. But if it's in the balance a little bit, like I said, I feel as though Mourinho's quite happy to prioritise the Europa League now, feels that that's the best way in, because especially if you look at the teams who are left in it, you know, you compare it to how strong the Europa League was last year when Liverpool and Sevilla got to the final, you know, teams like Dortmund who are in the latter stages. I don't think there's a team in there realistically at the best that can compete with United. So I think he'll see that as the best option. And I think if that tie's still on the balance, he might rest a few. But Chelsea at the moment have just gone into that dig in, get results mode, haven't they? I think they had a bit of a blip against Palace, obviously, but Palace are one of those sides, I think, on any given day with the players they've got, can click into gear and can get a result anywhere. But I think the last few games, the game against Bournemouth, they held off a little bit of a rally. Against Manchester City, they weren't at the best, but they dug it out. And I think I can see them doing exactly the same again on Sunday.
I have to say I agree. I think the fact that it's still a big game, still going to Old Trafford, and they would like to see them themselves kind of put Man United out of the equation as far as they're concerned. Mm. As far as Manchester United are concerned, I agree that the result of the Europa League game does affect the team selection. However, I still think the Chelsea element comes into it for Mourinho.
I still think
the fact that they, not only the fact that they've been soundly beaten twice this season at Chelsea, this is his chance to redeem a little bit. I think he's going to be very reluctant, regardless of how the Europa League goes, to rest some of his big players.
I think on this one as well, Mourinho right the way through the season has very much adopted the attitude. I think it'll be a really hard game for Chelsea, not to win, but to quite possibly, I can see a point all over it. I think I think there's every chance that Mourinho very much adopted the attitude of, we're not going to lose this. I'm not losing this in front of my own supporters. Mm-hmm. That they'll do everything they can to not lose the game, and it'll therefore become a remarkably long afternoon.
And as much as the Spurs may well have put pressure on Chelsea, they still really don't need to win this game. They can afford to draw this game and win against everyone else and still cancer to the league. So I think if it looks like Mourinho's set up defensively not to lose, then Kante will be like, yeah, sure, we'll take that.
I think it does get a little bit edgy though, doesn't it, if Tottenham win on Saturday and Chelsea do. You know, it's back to 5 points then, and you're looking at Chelsea's fixtures, you're thinking they've still got to come to Goodison Park. Everton are in great form at home. I think Spurs probably got the more favourable run of the two. So I'm not entirely sure that...
Spurs' tough games are at home. That's the thing you'd say. Yeah, yeah. They're in great nick at home. So Spurs' tough games, they've got Arsenal and United both to face at White Hart Lane, but they have still got to go to Palace, to West Ham, to Leicester and to Hull.
Mm. I mean, yeah, I think if it's Tottenham win on Saturday and they go there, and Chelsea go there only 4 points, I can't see how they can just say a point's decent here. I think they've got to go for it because, like I said, looking at those fixtures, it might not be as cut and dry as you think.
I think they can go for it, but I can see a situation where every sub, where we're at 60 minutes, it's level, and every sub makes Chelsea more attacking and every sub makes Man United more defensive.
Right, yeah.
That's how I think it'll play out. Every sub shores United's situation up. Every sub makes Chelsea more likely to get one, and then they might open themselves up a little bit on the counter, which they won't want to do. I think it'll be a really interesting game, but I think it'll be a strange game.
Let's just hope there's not a red card in the first 20 minutes and it completely changes everything. Makes everything we just said obsolete.
There's every chance there will be. Everton against Birmingham, I mentioned the genuine chance for fifth. I think that might be right in terms of, yes, it's going to be difficult, yeah, practically perfect, but Burnley, West Ham, Chelsea, Swansea, Watford, at least on paper, to set up Arsenal on the last day doesn't feel impossible. And the point at Old Trafford's significant in this context, and this is one of the, when we were talking before the Merseyside derby, one of the things we were talking about was Everton's record against the sides above them, away from home especially, and historically, not just recently. But there is also a, because you talk about that in the context of wins, but there's nothing wrong with 6 points, if you know what I mean. If you go to all sides, all the six sides above you, and get six draws, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that's one of the things that I think, you know, that a point can be significant. And that's, again, something that I think hurt Everton over the course of this season, is that they've been going to these places and not just not getting a point, but getting beaten.
Yeah, but I think that game in isolation, you look at it and I think it is a massive missed opportunity. And you look at the table now and you think United are probably just that little bit further away. And something we spoke about, Neil, before the derby, was that this Everton side don't have that, I think you used the term shared experience, going to one of these big teams, digging out a win, getting over the line, and then you go to these grounds in the future, you can say, we've been here before, we've done this, we know how to get through these games. And to have not only the 3 points robbed late on, but to have that robbed late on as well, was a massive blow for me. I just think that game's going to ultimately cost Everton. I thought if they could have gone there and turned United over, they could have pushed on for the top six, but now they look like they're going to be a little bit short.
No, I agree what you were saying about the shared experience, because it's interesting looking at their record away. I'd say the most recent win was actually Old Trafford, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you could argue that was their best performance of the season. So it's almost like they have remembered what it took to win at Old Trafford and they were able to get up to that level again. I think for Everton, finishing the season strongly and just missing out on fifth place is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. I understand from a fan's point of view where you're just thinking about how close you have been, how close you could be, and what could potentially happen next season when everyone's got better players and how much that makes a difference. But I think I'm a big believer on putting down foundations that you can build upon. And I think over the course of the last 2 months, Everton have got themselves into a situation where some of the perennial problems are looking like they're potentially going to be solved.
Yeah. Absolutely, I completely agree with that, and I think that's credit to the manager ultimately. I think you can see now that the work he's doing behind the scenes and on the training ground is starting to come through. I mean, the best example, I think, is over the past 3 games, Everton have scored 4 goals from set pieces. The previous manager wouldn't even practice them in training. He had no time for them whatsoever. And I think those little areas in terms of set pieces, fitness, topics that don't really get, you know, talked about that much, Koeman's come in and made a massive difference there, and he shored up that side in that sense, and that's kind of been the foundation for Everton's progression in 2017.
On then, looking at this sort of the real ability to win the games that should be being won, which you're referring to there, Matt, you know, the win some of those foundations. Lukaku's been obviously really, really important in that, and you can almost cross-reference a little bit our earlier conversation around Southampton in terms of the one thing that Everton, well, it's not just the one thing, but one thing that Everton have got is that, you know, it's a remarkable goal return from him this season, and they know that if they play reasonably well, and only reasonably well, and get Lukaku a decent number of opportunities, he's likely to take enough of them to take a game away from a side. And you know, it's going to be huge, firstly him staying, but also in general between now and the end of the season anyway, that's what he can do for this Everton side week in, week out.
Yeah, and he's got to be setting himself a target of 30 goals, I think, and say, you know, I've got to try and get there in the last 6 games. And if he scores 7 more goals between now and the end of the season, Everton have got a decent chance of getting in the top six. But yeah, he's been fantastic, and I think while you can nitpick at various areas of his game, it's something I commented on the show last week, saying how if you give him a chance now, he very, very rarely misses. I can't remember the last time the lad had a real clear-cut opening and you think, he's got a score there, and he's missed it. He's improved that area's game so much. I think Ronald Koeman said in his press conference today that he's told him he's not going to sign a contract, which is obviously a massive worry going forward, and the club are going to have a big decision to make in the summer. But I think from his own point of view, if he can get to that 30-goal mark, finish with a golden boot, he's going to stand himself in great stead in the summer if he does want to move to one of those super clubs.
I mean, I just think we should take a minute to appreciate how ridiculous it is that the top scorer of the league plays for the seventh best team. Mm. And how long has it been since anyone from the team that low has got even near the top of the goal scoring charts? So whether or not he's performed against the better teams, as some people have said he hasn't, I think the fact that he's there, he's got 8 home games in a row, I think he scored like that. So you've got that reliability, that consistency. Like you say, he's improving, he's finishing. I think you can get too tied up in, oh, what's going to happen next season? What's going to happen this year? You're right. If he gets those 7 goals this season, then that could be massive. If he puts Everton into the shop window, into the Europa League, allows them to get a better quality of player with the money that they will may or may not get from the sale of him, then everyone's in a better position anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing to mention as well, Neil, is that Everton have had more different goal scorers than any other team in the Premier League
really?
This season.
Really?
Yeah. I think the next highest scorer is only 4, but Everton have got, I think it's 18 different goal scorers this season, which is incredible, really. And I was looking at the stats before about what percentage of Lukaku's goals have actually contributed to Everton's goals overall in terms of his actual goals and his assists. And it's not as high as the likes of Sanchez, it's not as high as the likes of Costa. So Everton have got options, and players have chipped in with goals, but it's just, I think what they need, if Lukaku does stay, is to get somebody who's going to say, I'm going to give you 10 goals, I'm going to give you 15 goals. Get 2 players in like that who can complement, and then you go on to another level then, don't you?
On that then, looking at this sort of this weekend, this weekend feels to me like one of those games where you can be playing and wishing that was the case. Burnley recently came to Anfield, and I've seen them a fair few times this season, and what they're brilliant at is creating battles all over the pitch and then winning those battles. Yeah. That's what the stunningly good at. And you can put yourself into a position where you can just find it ridiculously hard to get your attacking players into the game because they just can't win that first split second of the battle, if you know what I mean. And you can't feed the ball to them under, you know, you're always under pressure. And so you can't quite feed the ball to them properly. And before you know where you are, it's going to be a game that firstly Everton go onto the pitch knowing they should win and knowing that the expectation will be that they win, but also knowing it's going to be pretty close to 90 minutes of sheer hell.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think they've drawn the last 2 away games, Burnley, haven't they? So there's a sense that they are getting it together a little bit on the road. And I think that game in Anfield you mentioned there, they were quite unlucky. They could have killed the game in the first half probably. They are a threat on the break. They're always going to be a threat of set pieces, but there's an assurance about Everton at the moment at home. And even that Leicester game at the weekend, which was crazy in the first 10 minutes, you know, back and forth, neither team not particularly good defending. When Leicester scored the second goal, there was, you know, I sat next to one of your mates and said, we'll still win this. There's a confidence, you can see it now. Yeah. If you put Everton in that position last season under Roberto Martinez, where they fall 2-1 down, there's nervousness at Goodison Park, everyone's panicking, the players are panicking. Whereas now, there's just a calmness about them. I think it's 7 home games in a row which they've won now. I think if they win this weekend, they'll break the Premier League record for Everton. So I imagine they'll get the job done in the end, but I think you're right, Neil. I think it's going to be a really horrible, might have to wait until a bit later on, but yeah, I think Everton will come through in the end.
Again, I think Burnley's game plan at the moment is to just stop Everton's game plan for at least the first 70 minutes of the game. It'll be very instructive if Ashley Barnes is playing, then you know that's exactly what he's doing, because that man is a pest.
Yeah, like, he's the hardest man to play football against in the league.
If you could tell me, like, list his qualities as a footballer, then you're a better man than I, because he's just a pest. Mm. Every time I see him, he's causing trouble. He's not doing, or he's not allowing you to do what you want to do, which probably is his best quality.
Like a modern day Kevin Davis, that sort of player.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And he's just so good at that. But when you're looking to try and win games, that can be quite limiting. Mm. So I think at that point, he will come off, Sam Vokes will come on, they'll go a little bit more direct, and that's pretty much going to be their game plan. So if that doesn't work, then I think that Everton may have an easier time of it. Mm. Early goals will be the key, though.
Yeah,
well, that's the key thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what.
Take Ashley Barnes out the equation.
I'm going to be terrified of him now. He's on the team sheet on Saturday, but I think you spot.
He manages to play four positions at once. He barely passes to a teammate, and he makes everybody he plays up against wish they could just like. You get the impression everyone's sort of going to the referee after 5 minutes of quality Ashley Barnes attention, turning to the referee and going, "How long to the break, ref? Get him away! Yeah. Can we just get him away from me, please?"
I guarantee. He's not got very many shirts in his game. No one wants to swap shirts with him.
That's
the
one he's fully ripped off the defenders during the match. Yeah, but I think the early goals point is a really good one. We talked on the show earlier in the year about Everton were going on average more than 45 minutes before they had a shot on target. I think it was after 10 games, yeah. which was staggering. And you look at them now, and in the past 2 months, they scored 2 goals inside 30 seconds in matches, and that's really important. And dispatching of teams like Burnley, West Brom came a few weeks ago, scored an early goal against them, did exactly the same against Hull. If you get that early goal in the first 20 minutes, it puts a completely different complexion on the game, doesn't it? So I'd expect them to start fast again, try and get them under pressure, and hopefully make that early breakthrough.
Well, it was Morales who was key to that in the last week. And I think, again, it looks like someone's lit a fire underneath him in these last couple of weeks, because whether it's actually just playing better, or he looks like he's got more fire within him. He's fighting harder, sometimes bubbling over, but in a way that's positive, that the coach would be happy with.
Yeah, I think the favourite part of Morales' performance for me on Sunday was not necessarily that run or squaring up to Robert Hoof, but there's a moment in the second half when, you know, one of those 50-50s, and he was on a yellow card, and you think, he's going to go off here, but he just stepped away from it. And in the past, he's a player who would have just gone clattering in or made a bad decision, but he seems to be making smarter decisions now. But he's scoring goals and making goals as well.
Just quickly, you mentioned there, you know, the importance of Morales in there. For me, though, there's Lukaku aside, the second half of Everton's season, it's inspired by, and in different ways, Schneidlin and Davis. I think Schneidlin's brought real composure, and Davis, you just sort of get the impression, you know, there's an exuberance about him. And it's sort of the blueprint, I think, for next season, Matt. You know, Everton's under 23s. They sealed the title, did they?
No, they need one more point
for
the last 2 games.
One more point for the last 2 games to seal the title on the one hand. And then I think it's the idea of, you know, Schneiderlin's a very good example of a player who's not quite had it happen in a top four club, but who is more than good enough to play top four football.
Yeah.
And so he ends up in a, you know, it's just some place just doesn't happen for them. But Everton have got to almost hoover them up, I think, in this transfer window. Mm-hmm. Lads for whom it's not quite took flight for them, but they're more than good enough to get there. And so to combine that with the Tom Davis, Mason Holgate, everything else that's going on to build a squad of 20 people to be able to fight a war on two fronts next season.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been a real five for Everton, and he's, I think all you need to look at is that Derby game when he was injured for that, and Ronald Koeman, obviously Seamus Coleman was injured as well, but he changed the entire system, brought in completely different players looking to compensate for his absence. And in that match, still, there was a big massive Schneiderlin shaped hole in front of that back four, wasn't there, when Mane burst through, when Coutinho burst through, and with the third goal as well. And he's become so important so quickly to the way this Everton team play. And we were on the show in the week, and Paddy used a great way of describing. He said he's got Gareth Barry's brains and James McCarthy's body. and in the past, Everton have kind of had to compromise in that situation, because you look at Barry and you think, good on the ball, really intelligent, but can he get about the pitch? McCarthy gets about the pitch well, but can he distribute good enough? Schneiderlin can do both of those things now. And I think what he does so well is he frees up other players on the pitch. If you put him in front of that back four, Idrissa Gueye can bomb on, Tom Davis can bomb on, Ross Barkley's got freedom to come inside and float there. And I think that position players can make it, you know, it can look quite easy at times. I think a lot of players could probably drop in there and do a half-decent job, because you get time on the ball, especially when teams are sitting off you at home as well. You get time on the ball, you can knock it around, you can pick your passes. But he's a player who'll take those couple of steps forwards, draw another man, and then immediately then you're in, aren't you, in midfield. It makes space for other players. And that's something that Everton have lacked, especially at home in the early part of the season when trying to break down sides. And it's no coincidence, since he's come into the club and come into the first 11, that they have got this home record really well, really good all of a sudden.
I think it's a testament as well to the Everton board, because I believe that Koeman started playing Schneiderlin football before he had Schneiderlin.
Yeah.
Is it to say, look, we're going to get this guy, so you guys get ready to... You guys get used to playing how we're going to play when he's here. So that was why he was able to slot straight in. Yeah. And everyone's been able to just funnel in around him. It's kind of...
Really good point, that's what I'd say, yeah. And on Davis as well, I think since he started his first game of the season against Southampton, he started 11 of Everton's last 12 games. And you look at him and think, after games against Liverpool, after games against Tottenham, when Everton went away and lost, he's an easy drop, isn't he? You say, oh, the 18-year-old lad in midfield, yeah. Everton have got good options in there. But he's stuck with him. And I think we're starting to see a maturity about his game now. You know, anyone you ask about him would say, that goal against City was fantastic. The run, the chop, the dinked finish. Mm. But it's his one-touch pass and his tackling, his intelligence. It's fantastic for an 18-year-old kid. And he's a player who gets beyond Romelu Lukaku and gives support to him. Ross Barkley's not really that type of lad. He's getting beyond the strike and making those sorts of penetrating runs. And Lukaku's always been a player who's been a lot better when he's got people around him. So I think the manager really likes Davis. He's got a very bright future.
Okay, expecting to win at the weekend?
Yeah, and I think, like you said, I think it'll be tough. Maybe not an early goal, but I think they'll dig it out 2-0.
2-0, okay, excellent. Liverpool go to West Brom, and I spoke to the British and Commonwealth middleweight champion, Tommy Langford, earlier, supports West Brom, and has got a big fight coming up. And it's about his 18 for 18, so he knows a thing or two about winning. Here he is. Joined now, yes, on 50-50 Football by Tommy Langford, who's got his own issues at the moment. He's got his own things that he's working on. Got a title fight coming up on the 22nd of April. We'll talk to him about that in a second. But before then, he'll have more than one eye on West Bromwich Albion at the weekend coming up against Liverpool. And Tommy, it's been a successful season, I think, broadly speaking. You know, you can't ask much more than eighth at this stage. Played some decent stuff at times, battled at others. Good win against Arsenal the other week. The West Brom know what they're about, is that fair?
Yeah, to be fair, like, I think it's been a good season for everybody, you know, and the fans, you know. West Bromwich Albion eighth in the Premier League. I mean, you can't grumble at that, you know. I mean, one, obviously our last couple of performances over the last 2 weeks, I think we're showing a bit of tired legs now. Got a small squad and it might be paying, you know, it might be taking its toll on us. But like you said, we've turned over some good teams and putting some nice football at times. It's been good to watch, and it's been good to be supporting and following. So I've been happy really with the season and happy with the football we've been playing.
You've been mentioning some tired legs. The thing I've noticed in the last couple of games is a lot of missed chances, and I think that's been, you know, that's been a bit of a problem right the way through the season, is that, you know, Rondon's not been prolific. He's been using Robson Kanu on and off just to almost, you feel, give him a break. If you know, against Southampton, for instance, if those chances, if a reasonable number of that hits the back of the net, we're talking about another 3 points on the board. And that, yeah. Is that where it looks like there's a bit of sharpness lacking?
Yeah, we are lacking. You know, I mean, I feel sorry for Rondon on one side because he does work so hard. You know, he's the hardest working striker in the Premier League, but with no goals. You know, but ultimately, strikers need to score goals, and that does count to things. You know, we need to be finding the back of the net. I mean, having a centre back as the joint top goal scorer in your team, I mean, says how good we are at set plays, but it doesn't say a lot for your striker, does it? You know, so I think that is somewhere where we do need to improve. But whether it's improving in the striker or improving the service, you know, but like you said, it's sharpness on the chances, missed chances. You can't let chances that are winnable, you know, that are scorable, go begging in the Premier League. And ultimately, we have at times, and that's what's cost us some of those games.
On the positive side, you know, one of the things that's got all these points, and it's just the quiet sort of incremental improvements. Whenever, every single time I've caught West Brom since he's gone there, Livermore stood out. He's been very, very impressive since moving.
Yeah, and he's, do you know what, he's had a... He's got hard boots to fill, really, because, to be fair, Jakob's another one of those unsung heroes. Before Livermore come in and the squad, you know, he did a phenomenal job. He's faultless every game. He's probably one of my favourite players in the team, and, you know, and of the season, really. He doesn't put a foot wrong. And to follow that at the age that, you know, Livermore coming in and, you know, coming straight into the team and doing a great job, you know, he has been very good, and obviously got his England selection as well on the back of it, and, you know, so he is looking like, you know, a great boy. And that's one thing I can say about Pulis: when we have spent the money, he's spent it very well. You know, Fletcher, Evans, Livermore, Phillips is turning into a very good player, although he's injured, you know, hopefully we're getting back more now, he gets back to his fitness now. But, like, you know, so we have had some very good things go on, and like you said, I mean, the unsung stuff is the stuff you don't... But the whole team in itself, it's hard to pick a player of the season and things, because they all graft so hard, they work so hard for the team. I think now we've got rid of that Berahino. There's no corruption in a team. Everybody's out for the same thing, and it's real hard-working squad.
The manager came under a bit of pressure start of the season, and I think he's, you know, as he's done throughout his career, you know, he's proven his doubters wrong there. And it's interesting you say that about, you know, it's everyone working for the same aim. He's very good, isn't he, at galvanising. It's one thing to be an individual. I want to talk to you about, you know, your preparation in a minute. It's one thing to be an individual where you've got your focus, but he's very good at galvanising a group of players towards something which they know they're not playing, you know, they're not playing Brazil 1970 football. You know that's not the case. But he galvanises them towards, let's do this job together. And and he gets his rewards year in, year out. And this season, it looks like, you know, an eighth place finish will be his reward.
I have to say, look, I wasn't the biggest, you know, I was a big critic of Pulis when he first come in.
Yeah.
You know, the football that was being played and stuff, but you got to say, he'd done the best with what he had at the time. But this season, he, you know, it just shows when teams stick with their managers, because there's a lot of people calling for managers' blood all the time, saying they sack him, this, that, the other, all the time on different teams. But when you stick with somebody and you let them work what they got to work and do what they got to do, it turns it around, and Pulis managed to do that. And, you know, this season, obviously, it's shown, especially the second half of the season, and, you know, what his real goal was. And he's had the time, thankfully, he's had the support from in the background staff and all that, you know, to be able to implement that. And I think it's, you know, it's a bit of a breath of fresh air, really, to have a manager that brings the team together and reunites everybody in the same thing. And I've got to say, Klopp does quite a lot of the same sort of thing. You know, everybody, he takes a lot of sting out the players, I think, your manager. I think he does, he takes a bit of stick himself, but I quite like him, I do.
It's what you want. I think you want that, you know, you've got to have everyone pulling in the same direction. You can't have the idea, I think, of people, you know, being distracted, of people feeling as though they know better. I think that's a really important thing. And that's something which, you know, I mean, you know, I'm talking to you there, you've, you know, 18 fights, 18 wins, and you've got this fight coming up, which is the biggest of your career, against Kurt Seidzer, on the 22nd of April on BT Sport and Box Nation. And you, at the minute, I mean, the work ethic you must be going through sort of day in, day out, and the run-up to that fight is, you know, the importance of focus, and I'm sure that, you know, your trainer is working very, very close with you on that. And, you know, I think it's Tom Chaney, your trainer, isn't it? I think I've read somewhere.
That's it. Yeah.
And it's, you know, coming up with a plan that you both buy into and that you're going to go and execute in order to win the fight and win the belt.
It's very true. You know, when you talk about any elite sport at the top end, and in particular in boxing, you know, this is a world-level fight, you know. And it's one of those, I've made in previous fights, obviously, winning the British title and Commonwealth titles and things. I'll be honest and say I haven't performed my best. You know, it's been a 60-70% performance, but I've still got all over the line and won. And I think that's because of the level that is. But, you know, world level, it's a case of you've got to hit the nail on it. You've got to execute the tactic perfect. It can be nothing else than 100% performance.
Yeah.
Because you are, you know, if you don't get it right, you are going to lose, and it's, you know, not going to be, it's going to be a painful night for you. But, like, thankfully, we've come to the, you know, we've got the same sort of mindset, me and my trainer, and I think we've found the tactic for this fight. It's an enjoyable tactic. It's the sort of fight that I want to be in. You know, the geezer's going to come at me. He's going to be right in front of me. He's dangerous. He's going to try and knock me out. But that's my sort of a fight. Somebody there, rather than running away, trying to survive and all this sort of thing I've had before, he's going to be right there in front of me. And so we've developed a tactic and developed a plan that I'm very comfortable with. And I think it bodes well. You know, you can say the same for football. You know, you've got to have a style of football, a style of play, same as boxing, that you're comfortable in delivering and comfortable in performing in. And that's what we've got. And I just can't wait to get in the ring next Saturday.
I want to ask you about that. I mean, at this stage of the training towards this fight, you know, are you now at the point where you want the moment more than anything else? You know, we're on the verge of being a week away. You just want the moment. You want to be in the ring. Yeah, it's now time.
100%. Like, you've done all the preparation. You've done all the plan. You know what he's going to do. You know what he's going to bring. There's nothing else that can be said, done, trained for. You know, you're not going to get no fitter in a week. So it's a case of, I just want to get in there now and you know, see what he's really about, and, you know, show what I'm really about. And that's what it comes down to. You get to this point, I think I had a great spar last week, and then I had my last spar this week, and you kind of, your head, you're thinking, I'm ready to fight now. I don't want to spar anybody yet. You know, you don't want to spar, but it's not like it's a performance improving spar or there's things to work on. It's just ticking a box. I'm just punching somebody today. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, because you've got the plan in your head, and so yeah, it's just 100% focus now, like 100% focus on the goal and on the delivering the right performance on the night.
On that, then, this last week, then, is it just reasserting the lessons that you've been learning on? Is that what you and the trainer work on now? Just going back, what we've been working on, just go through the motions over and over again so that it becomes as automatic for you as it possibly can when you're in the ring? Because you've got to be so switched on, you've got to be so smart to do it all. So, but to try to make it as sort of just as simple and as straightforward for you as possible now?
I think, yeah. I mean, the week coming up, actually, training-wise, it's not that hard physically on you. It's just a case of dropping the last couple of pound of weight and, you know, making sure you're nice and sharp in your punching and all that sort of thing. But I suppose the biggest thing is the mental approach. You rehearse things in your head, talk through things with your trainer and go over things and not go over. Or the only thing you're really going over is a positive outcome of everything you're doing. You know, it's like enforcing, I do this, I get that, I do this, I get that. And then so you're 100% glued to the tactic on fight night, and it just comes out of you then, like, you know, second nature.
Excellent stuff. You going to win?
Yeah, mate. Of course, definitely.
I had that vibe.
It's a tough fight. It's a, you know, as world boxing is, it's a tough, hard fight. He's very, you know, he's very strong. He's very good at what he does.
Yeah.
But I know, overall, I can beat him and I can outbox him, and that's what I'm going to do. And you know, I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be an entertaining fight, because he doesn't leave any room for any time for a break. It's going to be you know, all action.
Are you still doing a public training session on Saturday as well, on Sunday before the game as well?
I'm not now.
Yeah, has that been cancelled?
Unfortunately not, because of issues on one side of, you know, one side of the thing. It's nothing to do with West Brom, put it that way. But like, I'm not now, annoyingly enough. But I should be there in the fan zone anyway, seeing a few people. I'm normally there all the time before the games anyway.
Excellent. So you'll be knocking around beforehand. That's brilliant stuff indeed.
Yeah,
Tell me, and just quickly on the game, give me a prediction. What's the outcome going to be?
It's a tough one. This is for us.
You're not as certain as you are about the fight, are you, mate?
No, I'm not. You know, I have to say, I've always been a little bit of. I've always had a soft spot for Liverpool, like from way back. But like, you know what? I think I'd be happy with a draw. I'd be happy with a pure type performance and take away a 1-1 draw or something, or 0-0.
A scrappy 1-1 or a 0-0.
Scrappy 1-1 or 0, yeah.
Great to speak to you, Tommy, and all the best for the fight. I'll just give it another shout out there. It's on BT Sport, Box Nation as well, and it's Saturday the 22nd of April. Live on both, going out there at the Leicester Arena as well, in case you want to get down. But yeah, all the best for that, and I'll get back and see what everyone else makes of the football side. Good to speak to Tommy there, and moving along and looking at that game at the weekend, Mo. It's one which Liverpool, they don't need to win it. It would be unfair to phrase it as one that's a must win for Liverpool. But if Liverpool were to win the game against West Brom, you would feel as though, not that the fourth place was cemented for them, but that it would be at the point where you'd feel it was very much theirs to throw away.
Yes. Although that doesn't mean throwing away isn't exactly what they could do. I feel like it's a little bit more important than that, personally. I think that I wouldn't go so far as to call it an absolute must win, but I would say it's the very next level down from a must win, because we all really understand we got away with it last week. Like, by all intents and
most
purposes.
Definitely.
I mean, I was thinking about this actually when I was watching Arsenal against Palace. I mean, if Mignolet doesn't make that save at 1-0, then that could have been a very, very similar outcome to what we saw on Monday night, whereby it goes 2-0 and then it becomes too much of a problem to drag back, even with the cavalry coming on and Stoke get out ahead of steam, they get a third. We still don't really have a coherent game plan against this thing that seems to be troubling us with set pieces. And we're going to somewhere where they've pretty much got set pieces on lockdown. I mean, even the home game, we looked perfectly comfortable, 2-0, cruising. They get the corner, the first corner of the match in the 70-something minute. They score a goal. The last 15 minutes are an absolute nightmare for everybody. Yeah. So I think that we need to be able to go out there and execute our game plan without worrying about those things, or execute it so well that that doesn't matter.
Hmm.
I think that's probably a better plan than anything else.
I think the personnel available to Liverpool is going to be obviously really important, isn't it? You know, I didn't see much of Liverpool's game on Saturday. I was at the races, but when I seen it was 1-0, I seen the team that was playing, you know, you'd expect Liverpool to go to places like that and play well, but it wasn't really a surprise, you know, the amount of young players in there, the different system. So to get out of there and get 3 points from that match, it was massive. But I think if Liverpool go to Stoke with a similar 11, I'm not sure if Klopp's provided any updates on players.
The expectation, he's done the press conference, there'll be no Henderson, no Lallana for the game.
Hmm.
But that everybody else is... So, for instance, I think the expectation is Coutinho and Firmino will both be available to start for Liverpool.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting as well to see if he sticks with this three at the back system. It's the kind of game you'd expect him to stick with it. When you know you talk about the set piece vulnerabilities there, having three centre backs on the pitch could be important. Might be the type of game for Divock Origi as well, maybe against some agricultural centre halves to say the least. But yeah, I think it's West Brom at home. I've been a little bit vulnerable, haven't they? Recently, they got beat by Crystal Palace. They picked them up on the break pretty well. Obviously, lost to Southampton, but and then they beat a pretty pitiful Arsenal side. But again, it's going back to what we were saying about Everton, it's starting well against these sides. I think teams that have started well and scored early against West Brom, thinking back to Everton, thinking of the game against Watford, they lost 2-0. Thinking of the game against Southampton, they lost last weekend. Teams have been able to get at them early and score and then nullify them. Whereas I think if they get at you, score an early set piece, then it's not going to be like a Stoke for Liverpool where they can drag themselves out to it with two goals in a minute. I think it's going to be a lot harder than that.
I think the three at the back thing is really interesting because in my mind, it was a bit of a shock when the team came out, but in my mind, I felt like he was doing it, anticipating Stoke playing three at the back as well, and he wanted to match them up.
Hmm.
But then when Stoke didn't play three at the back, they played four at the back, it suddenly became a problem rather than a solution. Now, West Brom also play four at the back. I can't see them going to three at the back anytime soon.
No.
They've got a very set back four or five. So that won't be an issue. But he could look at it again and say, like you say, the physical presence that they have at set pieces may demand that extra protection.
You might just want a third centre-half to head clear set pieces.
Yeah.
That might be the logic. I don't know. I think it's. I Liverpool did get away with one last week. I think it's really difficult. I mean. I think the positive from a Liverpool point of view is, you know, the what last week's game actually shows, Mo, is what Liverpool need to have next season in terms of being able to both rotate the squad if they are going to be playing elite European football on the one hand, but also having an option on the bench or two options on the bench to bring on when things are not going so well to change a game in your favour, which is arguably the thing the manager really hasn't had. Even when Liverpool were playing very well this season, that's not been an option that he's had. You get the impression he's thought every change makes him significantly weaker and therefore has been reluctant to make them.
I think so. I think there was a period around, I'd say, October time, around the second or third international break, where we were able, particularly in midfield, we were able to play horses for courses. We were able to bring players on and think, okay, well, if that hasn't worked, we've still got this guy to come on and change it in this way. But at this point in the season, for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been bare. At this coming into the stage of the season where you need to have all your options open, we haven't. Now, one solution to that, easily, is to have more players. And I think that's the one that we're going to be looking at. But it comes a point where you start to think about, well, maybe there are other reasons why this is happening again and again and again and again. And maybe some of those need to be looked at. Maybe it's the players themselves in terms of looking at players who are more susceptible to injury.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you can kind of drive yourself crazy looking at those scenes. Because a good example of this was Harry Kane. He got injured against Millwall. Everyone said, oh, it's the season over. Oh, it's a really big problem for Spurs. He missed three games. Now, Sadio Mane, I was at the derby, and I can tell you it looked completely innocuous from where I was sitting. He was back up and walking off the pitch. I thought, oh, God, he's going to miss a couple of games. He'll be all right. Gone for the season. And it's just those little things that upon which massive changes lie, particularly a club like Liverpool, who have got a clear top tier of players and then everyone else who is not quite at the same level.
I think the example you mentioned there, Spurs, is really pertinent for Liverpool because the player you mentioned then, Neil, in terms of someone who can, you know, chip in with 10, 15 goals a season, who can do a job in a few different positions, Son Heung-min at Tottenham, I think he's a perfect example. And if you put him in Liverpool's squad and say, you can play off the left, you can play up top, you can play on the right-hand side, you can cover three different positions. And like you said there, everyone thought Tottenham's season's over now. But Kane was injured earlier in the season. He came in at the point of the attack, scored goals regularly, and he's doing it again now. And I think that type of profile of player, someone who is content with not starting every single week, is going to be aware he's not going to start every single week, but can come in for 5-10 games in the season and chip in with 7-8 goals in that time period.
Okay. How do you think it'll play out, Liverpool-West Brom, or West Brom-Liverpool more accurately, Matt?
I think this one's going to be a draw. I can see Liverpool being frail from set pieces, but I think they've got the quality to nick a goal as well, so I think 1-1.
Mo?
Head says 1-1 draw. Heart says we'll nick another one.
Okay. It was a huge win for Crystal Palace on Monday, as referred to before by Mo. Here's Robbie Scotcher on that and the weekend to come against Leicester City. Indeed, just joined by Robbie Scotcher to talk about the mighty Eagles. The mighty Eagles who got a fantastic 3 points against Arsenal to go with the 3 points that they got against Chelsea. And it's fair to say this game this week's it's a bit of a big one, really, Robbie, now, because it's off the back of keeping that momentum up, a win would actually take you up from 16th above Leicester, who were in 11th, and would, if not guarantee Premier League football next season, put Crystal Palace realistically one win away between now and the end of the campaign. And Leicester, they've got other things on their minds, other things on the plate.
Yeah, I mean, that's landed at the perfect time, that game. And that result last night for Leicester. So as a Palace fan, you're watching it and you're thinking, just stay in the game.
Yeah.
So with just conceding one goal, they got all to play for. So, yeah, I mean, that result... The Arsenal game, that's the best home performance I've seen against a top team we've ever played. That's my personal best.
I was thinking about it. It's probably the best home performance since 2015, because you had such a bad 2016, as has been reported. You've been struggling right the way through. It could well be the best performance that Selhurst Park's seen, I think, for 2 years. Is that fair?
Especially against a top team. Against one of the top six teams, I think that's the best performance I've ever seen at Palace. It really was. Against Chelsea, we won the game, but we didn't beat Chelsea. Well, we beat them, but we didn't beat them, if you know what I mean. We won the game. We beat Arsenal. I don't know, it's a time to play them and everything like that, but they've got a great team. And we beat them. We wanted it. It was a really good... You know, floodlit game, the fans were up for it. You could tell the minute we were in the stadium that something was going to happen that night. It was a brilliant, brilliant night of football.
And it was, and you're right to say that you beat them. You're by far the better side, really. You went in 1-0 at half time. It could have been more. The penalty just confirmed the 3-0 dominance that had been shown. It could have gone on and become 4. I mean, it was, you can say Arsenal were quite feeble, but they know it's finished by, arguably by Caballé's goal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they didn't have a shot in the second half on target. That's ridiculous. That's Arsenal. And the reason being, it's just everyone, all the players were up for it. They all wanted it. They wanted it more than the Arsenal players wanted it. And that was, you could see that. And I mean, people have said that a lot about Arsenal over the years anyway, haven't they? They always say that if you want to beat them, you want to get them a little bit. And we did that. And yeah, it was just... I mean, I don't want to gloat too much or anything like that, but you know what it's like when you sit and you watch your team play the way you hope your team can play.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
There's a couple of performances in there. There's a lot of talk about Saka. I'll come back to him in a minute, but the one that sort of caught my eye last three games when I've seen Palace is Townsend. That Townsend's really all of a sudden come alive for Allardyce in all areas of the pitch, really. He's great out of possession. He's winning it back all over the place. He's looking tons of quality on the ball. He gets the goal for Palace. He's really, really come to the party all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, he really has been very poor all season. Really, really not up for it. Never seemed bothered. Not running, not trying, not, you know, I mean, that might be a bit unfair. He fell out with Pardew. So they had a big argument during one match in there. I can't remember which one it was. Then Pardew took him off at half-time. But basically what happened, Sammy Lee's come into the club and Sammy Lee pulled Townsend aside and he said, when you were trying to get into the England squad for the Euro, you put in all this extra work, stayed behind with training, you were doing this, you were doing that. And he says, I don't see that anymore. So I went, and he said, that's what I want. I want you to do that here. And he's done it. And that is, Sammy Lee's made a massive difference. And plus the fact, you know, if behind you in defence everything's really shaky, you're not going to, you can feel a little bit lost. You can feel a little bit, the decision making goes, doesn't it? And I think, but yeah, I mean, also, who wants to be relegated two seasons in a row? It's not going to be good for you, is it?
Well, I mean, this is the, in general, this is the what Palace have rolled the sleeves up and managed to do here. You know, you're looking across the board and it feels as though you're looking at these lads and they all look galvanised. Benteke up front was throwing himself around. He still hasn't quite hit the goal scoring form I think people would have expected, but he's throwing himself around like no one's business, I thought. It was, you know, again, it was a real battling centre-forward performance where he managed to leave Mustafi and Gabriel with, you know, with just, you got the impression he left them absolutely exhausted on Monday night.
Yeah, well, and Mustafi as well hates a physical game. He really is a European centre-back who wants the ball at his feet and he wants to play it out, and, you know, he's a great player, but he hates the physical battle. And that's, I mean, Benteke is an absolute beast. He's amazing at that. That is his game. But we do need to give the ball to him better. And we seem to be, there's a lot of balls around his neck. There's only so much you can do with that. You're not going to score too many goals. And yeah, we've got to improve that kind of, our service to him has got to get better. But saying that, he really is. He's doing everything but score. He's putting an absolute shift in, especially in that Arsenal game.
On the at the back, Sacco's been excellent by the Southampton game. It's been a really good return for him. Looks as though he's reveling in the constant battle. I think that's one of the things that I've taken. I thought the other night against Arsenal again, Palace reminded me a little bit of and I mean this with all respect to every single to both clubs I'm about to mention, like a little bit like a more technically gifted Burnley. In that there was lots of footballers winning the personal battles on the pitch, and that's the thing that's impressed me about Burnley this season, is that they create and then win their own personal battle. Well, I think Palace's players are a little better than Burnley's if you just simply rate the attributes, and yet, you know, at times this season they haven't been showing that. You know, that's why Burnley are ahead of them in the table. But the other night, it looked, for instance, when you're looking at Sacco, he was determined that he was gonna get the better of any Arsenal player that came near him, if you know what I mean. It wasn't quite some sort of full defensive performance with everyone sort of working together. It felt like there was lots and lots of people saying, no, I'm just going to be stronger and better than my opposite number.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's quite funny because obviously on Twitter I've been reading quite a lot of the debates, especially with Liverpool fans saying, you know, would they have him back? Wouldn't they have him back? And all that type of stuff. So it's quite interesting to see what, you know, different people's take on it. But obviously Palace play a different way than Liverpool, so that's why he got a different job. But he does the simple stuff really well. I mean, really well. And, you know, when the ball's being crossed in by the byline trying to get it across, he's always blocking it. He's always in the way. He's always got his head there. His positioning is spot on as well. But, you know, when I was reading a lot of what the Liverpool fans were saying, and, you know, they're right. I mean, the main reason we don't want him back is, or wouldn't want him back maybe, is because of his relationship with Klopp. That's more important than anything else. But, I mean, I'm not sure how good he would be if he starts to have to play more expansive football, put his foot on the ball, take it out, you know. But in a team like Palace, he's just perfect. He just fits in so well. And his, you know, his reading of the game, he's been absolutely immense every single game. I mean, Troy Deeney couldn't get a look in on him. And Troy Deeney's massive player. And couldn't turn him, couldn't do anything to him. Sacco, it didn't even bother him.
Mm.
He just seems so in control at the moment. It's great to watch.
So looking ahead to the weekend, then you said before Leicester could be the ideal time to play them. I think you may well be proven right in that, you know, I think if you are Shakespeare, there will be a temptation, despite the fact that all these sides at the minute remain close to the foot of the table. If there's ever a temptation to maybe make a few changes and rest a few, you would think it would be this weekend and see what you get if you are Shakespeare. So you've got to be optimistic going into it. You can give them a hell of a game and end Saturday on 37 points, as I said before.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of injuries as well, so we're not going to be at full strength there. But
who's injured? Who's out? Who you'd expect to start? Who's injured that you'd expect to start?
Well, Van Aanholt, we're unsure about. We've only got one striker at the moment, so So that could be a bit dodgy. Who else at the back? Scott Dan, Delaney. So it's kind of in defence where we're missing a lot of players. But, you know, still, it depends who's... Leicester have got some good players there, though. They've got some good youth players as well. So, but we should win it. But you know what it's like? Football's football, isn't it? You just expect to beat Arsenal and lose the next game 5-0 because that's what happens in football, just to wind you up. But yeah, I'm hoping for a good win. I'm hoping for a win. And then we can ease up. And we've got second to last game of the season is against Hull. I think that will be... I think we need more than one win as well, but to be safe. But I think that's the one that will do it.
Excellent stuff, Robbie. Good to hear you back to your full optimistic self, although you are right to point out that, you know, Leicester could surprise everyone. They have been doing that quite consistently throughout the season. Let's get back and see what everybody else makes of the situation. Always excellent to speak to Robbie. The relegation picture then, gents, to round off our chat about the weekend's football. There's two big ones, really, two that have got my attention. Watford, Swansea and Stoke Hull. Stoke Hull, Matt, seems suddenly of significance for Stoke as well, in that, you know, you fancy Palace to get something at home against Leicester in the current context. You wouldn't be surprised if Swansea found a way against Watford. If Stoke were to drop points against Hull, they suddenly do look like the side that will get sucked in. There's always one, a trademark, etc., etc. We say it every single year, but it really would feel as though it was there were wolves at the door, if you know what I mean, if Hull got 3 points at Stoke.
Yeah, they're really struggling at the moment, aren't they? And that game against Liverpool, I think... If you've got a more in tune Stoke, a more, you know, at the start of the season, you think they'll probably go on and kill that off in the second half. But taking the foot off the pedal a little bit, getting a little bit lackadaisical, and like you said, there's always one team that seems to sleepwalk down there, and they've not really been spoken about much, have they? I think that they're one of those sides that
everyone presumes it's going to be all right.
Yeah, people look at the team and think, oh, Artovich is a good player, Shaqiri's a good player, and they've got, you know, good solid professionals there, but they do need something this weekend. I think you're right, Neil, but I think Hull. It's at the Britannia, I believe, is it?
Or, it's at the Britannia, and that's the thing. And that's what. But I think Hull need to get a win on their own pretty soon.
Yeah, but I think they have been pretty poor, haven't they, by all accounts. And I think if they're going to stay up, it's going to be on their home form. So you'd imagine Stoke would have a knock to nick that one.
If anyone else is going to get sucked in, Mo, you know, looking at this weekend, looking at the way in which it currently lies, it's Swansea on 28, Hull on 30, and going right the way up in 10th place, Watford are on 37. Palace are now on 34, with a game in hand on Hull and Swansea, and with this game coming up this weekend, and with what feels like a fair wind, you do think that if it's looking harder and harder to imagine a universe where both Hull and Swansea get out of it, but where Hull 2 win at Stoke, then you and Swansea win as well, and that puts Swansea 5 behind Stoke with 5 games to go.
I think that Hull definitely can get a result at Stoke. I think that they would be looking at it and thinking, this is, if we're going to get an away win, this is where we need to do it. We've got a team who aren't playing well, who are in free fall, who we could bring into trouble ourselves. It's almost like a 3-in-1.
Yeah.
So I can see, and Marcus Silva, he's proved himself to be a very clever man. So whether or not it's a case of getting around the heads of them saying, okay, we've got the comfort zone of playing well at home, we need to go out of our comfort zone and still play well. Mm. Getting Harry Maguire back this week would be massive if they can get him back within that. I think it's interesting, though, because it's almost like every week we've said a different team to be dragged back in. We've been through Bournemouth, we've been through Burnley, we've been through West Ham. And the later it gets in the season, the more the danger is real. And the thing with Stoke, I think I said it last week, they've got a little bit of an identity crisis going on whereby they want to be progressing. They want to no longer be a little team punching above their weight. But their best playing, their best pattern of play is as being that. And they've also got a core of players who are getting old together. You look at Glenn Whelan, Jeff Cameron, Ryan Shawcross, John Walters, and then even Crouch. They might have to replace all of them in one go. And I also think that Ryan Shawcross hasn't been as good as he's been in previous years, this last, I'd say, almost 18 months. So they might need to make a big change. The thing is, if you're looking at making that many changes, do you do it with a new manager? Because from what I've seen, Mark Hughes' approval rating is plummeting.
Yeah. It's just not giving them an adventure or a journey, and that's a killer thing.
Very much so. So I think it's an interesting time for Stoke. I think if they don't get a result, then they can really worry, more so than some of the other sides we've put in this position previously. However, if you're asking me guns to our heads, it's still going to be one and a half Swansea.
Well, but the interesting one on the Stoke thing, and that's why I think when we talk about people getting dragged in, Stoke's next two are Hull home, Swansea away. So, should they find themselves not getting 3 points against Hull, and then and Swansea find a way to get a win against Watford, and then the next side that comes is Stoke, then any Swansea win could put them within 2 points of Stoke, if all of that comes to pass. And now we're talking. And in the meantime, Bournemouth are probably getting a little edgy back again, because I think it's really interesting all the way through the season, Matt. I've been thinking, oh, it's going to be another one where 33 points will mean you're safe, 34 points will mean you're safe. It actually now looks like a proper season where it's going to be a 40 point effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think when we get to this point of the season, one win makes such a difference, doesn't it? I mean, it was only last week we were thinking West Ham are in real trouble, and it was during the game when they got beat by Arsenal, and you're thinking, they're only 3 points away from this, and then they beat Swansea last weekend, and then that's it, they're safe now. And I think a lot of those teams you mentioned there, I think if Stoke win this weekend, you'd probably say, that's all them done.
Yeah, it's all sound. Then they've got five games to go, and they just basically need to get another 2 points, and they've got 41 points.
But that's kind of the problem though, isn't it? Because the ones who we're saying, oh, they're all right now, they're not really kidding away. Apart from Leicester, they're the only ones who've actually really properly pulled away from trouble, because they're all still kind of bunched up there. So like you say, Bournemouth will start, if Stoke get a result, then it turns on to Bournemouth. And I think the fact that there's so many of them up there can be a bad thing, because they all think, well, obviously there's that many other teams. It's not going to be us, obviously, surely.
It wouldn't surprise me at this point if there's a way in which there's two down and then there's two from four last game of the season. But I almost think it won't be Palace and it won't be Leicester. Leicester are on away. They're on the same number of points as Stoke, but they've got an extra game. And also, you just sort of feel as though once this European thing settles one way or another, they'll put another win on the board. But it wouldn't surprise me if there is sort of somehow, sides that we've gone, I thought they were out of this, have actually managed to find themselves falling back in it. You know, say West Ham. West Ham very much could just do with getting one more win on the board to put them onto 39 points. If they can just get one more win, and they're away at Sunderland this weekend, so they'll be targeting that. You know, if they can just get one more win away at Sunderland, next game's then home against Everton. You're just thinking, if you're them, I'll just take 4 points. Can we just have 4 points from those two?
Yeah.
And then we just get out, and then we just go shrug our shoulders and we plan for next season.
Because after that, they've got to play Tottenham on the Friday night.
They've got to play Tottenham and Liverpool still.
Yeah. And they've got, so hopefully we've got to go there as well. So they could do with it getting it done early.
I think the other thing as well is about that one more win. It can trigger complacency, can't it? Because if you're a fan and you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, it'll come eventually. Then you get to 5, 4, 3 games out, and you're suddenly thinking, we are actually right in this here at the moment. So, you wouldn't rule any of those teams out, but I'd still agree with them. I think it's going to be Borough, Sunderland, and then one of Swansea and somebody else.
Okay. Huge thanks to both Mo and Matt working through all the weekend's games with us here on 50-50 Football. We will disappear off. Be back, looking back over the weekend's action on Monday, as per usual. See you then. Have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy your football.